Hey there, my friends. We have come to the next item of the mindfulness for young adult session, and that is actually a Dhamma sermon, kind of a short Dhamma sermon. And these days we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta, which is available in Sutta Nipata. And Sutta Nipata is considered as one of the primary books or early Buddhist teaching, and there are very interesting suttas there. And very common suttas which we all know, very familiar with, like Karaniya Metta Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Mahamangala Sutta, all are from Sutta Nipata, which is available in the Kuddaka Nikaya, where Dhammapada is also belonging to. And in this Kaggavisana Sutta, the idea is that it's a kind of a epithet, kind of a simile given, and that is a rhinoceros horn. And rhinoceros horn is something very steady, very strong, and it is a single horn. It is not like a horn belonging to a digger where there are many parts, many branches, but rhinoceros horn is a single horn, and it's a very strong and steady one. So the simile here and the kind of repeated term is therefore to live like a rhinoceros horn. Therefore, it's an emphasis is given on the seclusion, kind of a solitude life, and that is the main theme in this whole rhinoceros horn sutta. And we were discussing one after the other. This whole sutta contains many verses and commentary attribute each verse to some sort of a connection with the Pacheka Buddha. Pacheka Buddha, as you know, is sometimes he called as a private Buddha, where he doesn't have the capacity to teach others in depth, but he also self-enlightened. There are various reasons for him to become enlightened, and what is the proximate cause for him, his enlightenment is something interesting, and that is what each verse is explaining us. To a certain Pacheka Buddha, maybe one kind of a situation, one kind of a life situation that he come across. And to another Pacheka Buddha, another kind of an incident that he come across. So likewise, different stories are there, different incidents are there in their lives. And they looking at it in a different manner, with yoniso manasikara, with wise attention. And as a result of that, they were able to attain Pacheka Buddhahood. So here on the 47th verse, there's a beautiful verse here. Adha pasansama sahaya sampadam setha sama sevitabba sahaya. Ete aladha anavajya boji eko chare kagga visana kappu. Adha pasansama sahaya sampadam. Now here sahaya sampadam is a good companionship. Now we typically may have various companions, various friends, and among them having a good friend is kind of a rare situation. There are various friends. Some are actually helpful, some are not helpful. Some are simply doing some lip service, but some are actually helping honestly, some are taking us to the hell and some are taking us to the heaven, some are teaching us proper dhamma, some are misleading us. So likewise, there are different categories of friends are there, associations are there. So here actually mentioned about the positive side. We are good friends. If you are able to find a good friend, so here it is mentioned, it is kind of an excellent thing. It's a praiseworthy activity to have a good friend, a good companionship. And setta sama sevitabba sahaya. Setta sama. Setta means someone who is superior to oneself, and sama means who is similar to oneself. Now, when we are in search of a good friend, a Kalyana Mitta, if we are able to find someone who is better than us, So then something is there to learn from him or her. Maybe from the spiritual aspect, there may be certain qualities that we also like to develop. And this person is giving us some sort of an example. And therefore, having such companionship is really worth. On the other hand, at least if we can find someone who has some similar capacity, like ourselves, then still no harm, because we are also going in the proper path. He is or she is also going in the proper path, somewhat similar. Some parallelism is there. So therefore, there is no harm. But on the other hand, if we are finding out another person who is somewhat misled or somewhat inferior, in the sense he is not much interested in Dhamma, not in the correct path, then we have to be careful in such association. Because we should be careful enough not to get into that trap, not to face some sort of a downfall in ourselves. We actually, if we can be a good friend, a companion, a Kalyana Mitra to that person, that is also a worthy thing. So for such, we need to have some established mindfulness, some established good qualities. Otherwise, we become a victim of that companionship. So therefore, this Kalyana Mitrata is something that Buddha really encouraged. And Buddha is the best Kalyana Mitra. Buddha is the best person who actually, as a teacher, as a guidance that we can depend upon. And from him, actually, the Dhamma has come to the world. So having some sort of a companionship with such a person is always something kind of a blessing. And ete aladda anavajya bhoji. Now the situation, if we don't have such a person, if we don't have a person who is better than ourselves or at least similar to ourselves, then that means we are not getting such a companionship. We are not getting such a good friend. On that situation, there's a very interesting simile giving here, another simile actually. Ete aladdha anavajya bhoji. Now, anavajya bhoji means that one is having kind of a blameless meal. Kind of having their meal in a blameless manner. Now the situation, actually the verse pointing out to an interesting incident happened to a particular Pacheka Buddha, and he actually was a king. He is also called Brahmadatta, and he is actually a king. And one day he saw several Pacheka Buddhas are approaching his palace, and so he, without much knowledge, he invited them to come to the palace. And then he asked who you are. And then they represented them, they explained themselves as Anavajya Bhoji. Then the king is asking, who are they? I mean, what did you mean by Anavajya Bhoji? Then they explain, even if we receive something hard or some sort of not delicious food, still we eat it with a equanimous mind. If we receive very delicious food, still we are not sort of delighted, rather we simply eat them with an equanimous mind. So this is why we are called ourselves as Anavajya Bhoji. So in other terms, sometimes they may receive very delicious food, so they still maintain some calmness, equanimity in their mind, and they eat that food. And on the other times, sometimes they receive very minor things, not delicious things. So very, say, basic things. Suppose they are going on village Pindapatha, and some poor people may offer something very hard, very basic. So they still can have those food items without any kind of a resentment, any kind of an unpleasant feeling. And that is why they are called Anavajjaboji. So this situation, these Paccheka Buddhas explained to the king. Now king didn't believe it, so he wants to check these Paccheka Buddhas. So what he did was, he invited these Paccheka Buddhas to the palace, and he, without preparing some kind of a royal meal, so he prepared very basic meal, and he offered to the Paccheka Buddhas. And they, without any trouble, with a satisfied mind, so they had that food. And then they went away blessing the king, after blessing the king. So the next day also the king invited them. And next day also the king prepared such food. He didn't go for any delicious royal meal. Rather, he prepared very basic minor food in order to test these Paccheka Buddhas. Now, that day also Paccheka Buddhas after came to the palace. Once this king has offered those basic meal, so the Paccheka Buddhas had that meal with an equanimous mind. Again they blessed the king and they went away. For the third day also the king invited them for the palace for next day's meal. So the third day, then king wanted to check on the other side. So he has prepared a royal meal, very delicious food. And he thought probably these people might get too much overjoyed because of this royal meal. So he prepared such a meal and then they offered to the Paccheka Buddhas. On third day also they had an equanimous mind and they had the royal meal. There is no any kind of speciality for them, even though they receive the alms from the palace. So they maintain that equanimity. And then the king has noticed this balanced attitude in the Paccheka Buddhas. Now typically what happens is, when a monk is offered some basic food, typically they might get upset. They might even criticize the dayakas. Why you guys have taken the opportunity? I mean, there may be enough rich dayakas, rich devotees available. Why did you, if you can't offer good food, why did you take the opportunity? Probably you could have offered that opportunity to someone else, a well-to-do family. Then they may give us good alms. So likewise, a particular monk can even criticize. On the other hand, if someone comes and offer very delicious food, and then sometimes the monk gets really elated and he started to praise too much to that particular devotee because he got a lot of good food. But here the situation is different. Paccheka Buddhas are completely free from any craving, so they didn't have any kind of a grudge or any kind of a criticism towards the very basic food. Or they didn't have any sort of an attachment or any kind of a too much happiness about the very delicious food. So they were able to maintain some same kind of equanimous mind towards the both situations. So the king has noticed this well-balanced manners maintained by the Paccheka Buddhas. And so he also has taken this point to his mind. And this has become the theme, or this has become the triggering point for this king to reflect how to become such a person who has that kind of a unwavering mind, unshakable mind between the vicissitudes in the life. You know, we all face various ups and downs in our life. Now, sometimes we hear certain praise. On certain other times, we get blamed. On certain times, we become happy. Some pleasurable things happen. On the other times, we get onto some sort of a suffering situation. Maybe we get sick. So, we got to suffer. Some kind of an ailment. So, we sort of an unhappiness is there. Sometimes we get a lot of gain. On other times we lose our properties, our wealth. But so sometimes we lose. And on other occasions, our good reputation spread everywhere. Everyone is praising, everyone is spreading our good reputation. So we become well reputed. Our fame is spreading. But on certain other occasions, we become really stuck with sort of a ill fame. So these are the ups and downs in our life. So how to face this kind of an up and down situation? So these are the vicissitudes in our life. Is it possible for us to maintain kind of a balanced attitude towards these both extremes? So that's a very beautiful verse coming in the Mangala Sutta, that is also in the Sutta Nipata. Puttassa loka dhammehi chittang yassana kampati asokang virajang khemang etam mangala muttama. So that is actually the last verse explaining very good qualities in the Mangala Sutta. Puttassa loka dhammehi, this loka dhamma is this atalo dhamma, or the eight types of ups and downs, or the eight types of life situations, eight kinds of vicissitudes in our life. So even an arahant have to face this, even the Buddha has to face this. Then how about ourselves? So we definitely have to face this situation. So when Buddha come through such situation, when he is going through such situation, so he is able to maintain that unwavering mind. Say for example, there is a situation in that Vassa period. So Buddha actually didn't get enough food. So he actually got some horse food. Probably you might have heard that. So, but Buddha was not changed, or Buddha was not suffered at that moment, but he endured that situation. The people who invited him for 3 months Vassa period, they couldn't offer delicious food. Actually, they had a responsibility to look after the Buddha and the Sangha. That's why they got the invitation, accepted the invitation. But unfortunately, due to many reasons, so this group of lay people couldn't look after the Buddha and the Sangha during the Vassa period. So they only got very raw food during the whole 3 months. But Buddha and the Sangha was unwavering, and they were able to endure that situation. On certain other occasions, sometimes King Ajatasattu invited Buddha and the Sangha to the palace for dana, almsgiving. Sometimes King Bimbisara invited. Sometimes King Kosala invited. Sometimes Anathapindika invited. So likewise, there are very positive side also available. And sometimes Ishaka invited. So in such situation, they actually are well-to-do people, well-to-do rich people, kings and the merchants. So they offered the best food. On that time also, Buddha and the Sangha mainly maintained their kind of an equanimous attitude. And certain other situations that sometimes Buddha's reputation was spreading among many societies. And certain other occasions, sometimes even some people come and blame the Buddha. Like Chinchimanamika, so she came and made a false accusation among the people while Buddha was preaching. So likewise, Buddha himself has faced this kind of ups and downs in his life. Actually, today we also are going through, as a whole nation, as a whole human race, we all are going through some sort of a problematic situation. Now, the whole world is in a kind of a calamity. Now, this is a kind of a downside we all have to endure. Are we able to maintain such an enduring mind in this kind of a situation? If we consider the Sri Lanka situation nowadays, so every day the deaths are increasing, many infections are spreading, and the the death rate is increasing and the death has come to the doorstep. So that is the kind of a risk that we all are situated. Now, are we able to maintain unwavering mind, unshakable mind in this kind of a situation? And they also mentioned that such a mental skill or balanced mind is one of the essential components for the survival. Otherwise, if we get afraid, if we become panic, then situation become aggravated. So when things are favorable, are we able to maintain kind of an equanimous attitude without becoming elated? When things are not favorable, unfavorable, are we able to maintain an equanimous mind without really collapsing? So this is the, in a way, practical problem or practical challenge we all have. Actually, meditation is one thing, and once we reach some sort of results, so we actually have to train ourselves to maintain this kind of unshakable attitude, unshakable mind during this lifetime situations. So that is why Buddha mentioned, puttassa loka dhammehi chittam yassa na kampati. So whenever these ups and downs of life are encountered, the mind is not shaken. Chittam yassa na kampati. Asokam, there is no sorrow. Virajam, there is no any taint. There is no any defilement in the mind. So mind still maintains the purity. Asokam virajam khemam. And he is able to maintain kind of a oasis in his mind. So he already has found that oasis. He already has found kind of a calmness within, not from outside. So internally that particular person has a kind of a refuge. So he is not expecting sort of a refuge from the outside. Rather, through the practice, he was able to find refuge inside. The outside may be burning, outside may be going up, may be going down. But he is able to maintain his mind in a separate internal refuge, inner refuge. So that inner refuge he has found. So this is something that we all have to encourage ourselves, that we all have to keep our goal to find that inner refuge. So this inner refuge is not the having a lot of wealth. This inner refuge is not having kind of a fame, not kind of a reputation, not some sort of a conceited situation. Rather, finding out refuge through the Dhamma, through our own practice. So the Buddha's teaching, particularly when one is practicing it internally, practically, so such refuge is going to be available. So that refuge has to be recognized. That refuge has to be appreciated. And that refuge has to be made abundant. There is another interesting part available in the Dhadu Vibhanga Sutta. Satcham anurakheya. So Buddha mentioned, so when you are able to find such refuge, so you got to maintain your mind there. So you got to familiarize there. So this may not be available at the beginning. It may be very subtle. It may be very quickly slipping. We might not even notice it. We not even give any value to it. So on such situation, we have to listen to Dhamma. We have to get some guidance from Kalyana Mitta. And that Kalyana Mitta, the good friend, may lead us to that refuge. May guide us to that refuge, may help us to recognize that refuge. So once we recognize that refuge, so we have to live in that refuge. We have to be or dwell in that refuge. So then only we are able to recognize the true nature of that refuge. So for that, actually the presence of a Kalyanamitta, presence of a good friend is extremely worthy. And in this verse, coming in the Kagga Visana Sutta, where the emphasis is given to the association with the Kalyana Mitta, and if not we are able to find such a Kalyana Mitta, then one has to lead a secluded life like a rhinoceros horn. Because no point of associating with fools who may be dragging us towards the hell, who may be causing for downfall. So therefore, there is no point of any association with fools, bad friends. So rather, better live alone, live a secluded life. So that is what mentioned in this verse, and that has become the theme for this king to reflect. And when he was reflecting thoroughly, how that Pacheka Buddhas behaved when he offered some raw food, and how they behaved when he offered very delicious food. So they were able to maintain that equanimous, unshakable mind. So he was inspired to look at that, and he was inspired to grow such qualities in himself. And he also was a very, fortunate person, that king. And after reflecting like this, he was also able to attain Pacheka Buddha. Now, king has become a Pacheka Buddha. Now, for him to become Pacheka Buddha, the triggering point or the triggering incident is this unshakability of those Pacheka Buddhas when they are receiving different kinds of food. Either sort of raw basic food or either very delicious food. So they are able to maintain the equanimity. So that has become an inspiration to this king, and that actually has caused him to further reflect, contemplate, and he himself become a Pacheka Buddha. So this is the verse that we discussed today, and with that I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I'd like to open the session for questions. Yeah, typically there are 10 vipassana upakkilesas are mentioned in Dhamma. So all these are actually some success stories. So when one is developing vipassana, particularly meditation in general, samatha vipassana, so one may come across some success situations. Say for example, you are able to have kind of a bright light, especially when developing this concentration. And sometimes what happens is we become attached to that light. So we are sitting in order to get that light. So when we are expecting that light, and we get absorbed to that light, and we become blissful. So that becomes our objective in the meditation. So that is where the problem is. So we become quite attracted to that light, and we even recognize or identify with that light, and we even measure ourselves with others based on that light, considering, okay, I am the one having the most brightest kind of a nimitta, the others are not able to have such nimitta, I am the one only able to maintain such deep concentration, others are not capable having such concentration because I have a bright nimitta. So likewise, based on that obhasa, what we call the light, brighter nimitta, sign, counterpart sign, one can have conceit, one can have kind of an attachment. So that is one kind of upakkilesa available in meditation. And on other times, one may be attracted to concentration. So one may sit and immediately the mind become concentrated. And probably one may be sitting many hours in that blissful concentrated state. And one may become even conceited because of that. And you may even measure your capacity compared with another person that measuring that I am the one who can meditate for 4 hours, 5 hours, the other people can't do it, so I am the best. So likewise, you are generating some sort of an ego because of that concentration. So this is another upakkilesa. And sometimes people have the wisdom, too much wisdom. Say they, from the beginning, from when they wake up till they go into sleep, they talking, explaining. And they are trying to explain Dhamma to the others and talking too much about various philosophical subjects, maybe writing books, conducting seminars, etc. So they are over enthusiastic about the Dhamma, enthusiastic about various philosophical dogmatic teachings. And that is where the wisdom, we can't say real wisdom, but a kind of a knowledge has become kind of an upakkilesa, kind of a defilement. And sometimes people want to clearly see certain things. Say, for example, you are requested to label or note each and every activity in the daily life, just to improve clear comprehension, sampajanya. So assume that you are improving that skill and you are trying to very closely look at the phenomena. Say, for example, when you are eating, so very closely you are looking at that situation and you are able to do some sort of thin sampling of time. So very quickly, very many stages that you are able to see. So this is the skill actually, that is necessary skill. But sometimes this skill has become some sort of a conceit in one's mind. So they may compare that skill with someone else's skill and they can become conceited. So they may even attach to that skill. So this is where the skill has become a upakkilesa, a defilement. And so likewise, there are 10 such upakkilesas mentioned, and the last one is actually the main culprit, where one is attached to any of these situations. Actually, all 9 states are certain qualities that we all have to develop. But on the other hand, the 10th one is the main problem, that is the attachment. So when we are attached to the light, kind of a nimitta, when you are attached to the concentration, when you are attached to thin slicing of time, when you are attached to too much knowledge. So likewise, this attachment and the conceit, identification with those skills is the upakkilesa or defilement which we are talking in the vipassana. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 8. This has got 2 parts to it. Dear Venerable Sir, it's a general question. Would you please be able to explain how one can identify the viewpoints within the I am holding? And the second part is, what would be critical if the one is caught and... What would be the critical dhiti when one is caught and taking in the ride of this endless samsara? Much merits and appreciation with metta. That's the end of the question. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I can answer in general. So actually, it is not immediately that our mind become conditioned with kind of a dhiti, kind of a viewpoint. Rather, it's a kind of a gradual development happens, and that is explained in the Vipallasa Sutta, where Buddha mentioned at the beginning what happens is we get wrong recognition. We recognize things in a wrong manner. That is called Sanya Vipallasa, where, say for example, we see things as permanent. We see things as happy, pleasurable, and we see things as something available, kind of essence, there is kind of a core, there is kind of a self is available. So likewise, there are wrong perceptions, wrong recognition happens, and that is the very basic level. And when we do it again and again, so this wrong recognition, So wrong perceptions or the perversions are happening again and again, and that lead to wrong thinking. So now the mind is conditioned to think to some extent in that wrong manner. So that is where the thinking also now conditioned to wrong way of wrong direction. Now previously we recognized wrongly, wrong recognition, and now wrong thinking, wrong cognition. And now we do wrong thinking more and more, again and again. Now it has become kind of a pattern, kind of an obsession in the mind. Now it has become the ditthi. It has become kind of a view, deep-rooted view in the mind. So this is the progressive development of the view happens in our mind. At the beginning, it happens in the very basic level with the wrong recognition, and second kind of a wrong cognition, wrong thinking, and later as a kind of a conditioned way of thinking. Now it's difficult to change because the mind has deeply rooted in that wrong way of thinking, wrong way of say perceiving, wrong way of having some sort of a view framework in the mind. So actually very difficult to change when one has come to that third level. So that is why Buddha also mentioned that Miccha Ditti is one of the very difficult mind condition that one has to overcome. Say for example, if one is believing that there is a permanent God available, so the all people or all creatures are made by a God, so that has become a belief, that has become a view, and assume that you are from your childhood heard that, and you have read many books, again and again thought about that, and ultimately it has become deeply rooted in your mind. Now if someone is telling that there is no such God and there is something cause and effect relationship is going on, then you may not like to believe it. You don't like to consider that, because your mind is so conditioned to think like there is a omnipotent God available. So likewise, so when our mind is too much conditioned and deeply rooted in a certain way of thinking, so it's very difficult to change. So I mean if you are really wise, probably rather than get on to such conditioned, deeply rooted, fixed view, better maintain some sort of a provision to consider other thoughts as well, to consider other views as well. So that's why even in certain suttas like can't remember the name that Buddha mentioned, Chanki Sutta. In Chanki Sutta, Buddha mentioned that there are many different ways that one can gain knowledge. That through hearing one can gain knowledge, from the generations, from tradition one can gain knowledge, and contemplative thinking one can gain knowledge. So, but Buddha mentioned, so none of these are really experimental. And these all are depending on the thinking. Depending on certain kind of approximation. On that situation, Buddha said, there may be the truth available there, or sometimes there may not be truth available there. So always these situations are available. Either truth may be there, or truth may not be there. So therefore, don't get any kind of a fixation. So that is the advice Buddha is giving. So if we are able to maintain that kind of an open attitude, then it is easy to break a wrong view. If we are denying all the other teachings, and if we are always thinking that our thinking, our teaching, our belief is the best belief, our belief is the only belief, our belief is the only true belief, then we are actually going to some sort of a fixed view. Then it is very difficult to consider someone else's teaching. So Buddha's teaching always give us that freedom of contemplation, freedom of verification. So at the beginning we may have faith, But that faith has to be verified. That faith has to be practically proved. So when you are proving yourself practically, then faith becomes not a blind belief, but it becomes some sort of a practical understanding. So in order to remove, therefore, this wrong belief or wrong view, so maintaining kind of an open attitude is one of the key features that one has to maintain. Yeah.
Question number 3. This one is mindful walking. Dear Venerable Bhante, I am trying to understand clear comprehension through the mindfulness practice. You explain the meaning and how it relates to the practice very well, and I try to understand where I can practically see clear comprehension working or developing. During the explanations, the most basic level is explained as knowing that the mindfulness is intact through various posture junctions. When I do walking practice through my observations, I know I am in the present moment and mindful about what is going on. I feel this informed awareness transferring from one leg to the other in the walking process. Also, during turning, I feel the difference of walking straight and turning, and how the mind stays on focus or distracts to something else. When I can maintain mindfulness throughout the walking part and multiple cycles, I am aware of that and also the nature of diminishing mindfulness when the mind distracts. Can I take these awarenesses of the change as the quality of clear comprehension? Much merits whereby will guidance with metta. The end of the question.
Yeah, this may be one aspect of clear comprehension where you have a kind of a holistic view or kind of a whole view. But on the other hand, clear comprehension has the other aspect that whatever the phenomena arising in the present moment, you should be able to recognize or see from different angles. Say for example, when your foot is touching the ground, so what are the qualities available? So how they are behaving? And what are the, say, body parts going through that experience? Say for example, when your foot is touching the ground, so which part of the foot first touching? Is it the heel? Is it the middle? Or is it the toes? So you are now recognizing clearly. On the other hand, what are the qualities that you are experiencing? Is it the hardness? Is it the stiffness? Is it the softness? Is it the grossness or heat, cold, whatever it is? So now you are seeing more detail in a way. So recognizing all these subtle details is one aspect of the clear comprehension. Now, previously we actually saw, or we only noticed, that the foot is touching the ground. That's all. We couldn't penetrate that situation. But now we are able to look at it more in a more detailed or kind of a closely investigative manner, so that all that subtle details become available to you. So that is one aspect of clear comprehension. So that is what that we have to deliberately develop at the beginning, because otherwise we sometimes become satisfied with mere establishing of mindfulness. That is not enough. So once the mindfulness has established, so it is our duty to introduce this clear comprehension by looking at subtle aspects of this experience. Yeah.
Question number 4A. This one is actually a request. Dear Bhante, presume we are coming to the end of the Rhinoceros Horn Sutta. What is the next one Bhante is planning? Before we start another long sutta, I appreciate if Bhante can deliver a Dhamma talk on element characteristics using a short sutta. Many practitioners, including myself, have indicated in the question and answer that we experience these elements during our practice and would like to understand them and improve the practice from this perspective. With metta, let's see another question.
Yeah, so actually this Rhinoceros Sutta is a fairly long one, so it may take many months, I think, to complete it, because it's already, it's having about 75, 35, it's actually around 40 verses are there in the Rhinoceros Sutta. And therefore, it may take several more months to complete it. But what we can do is, I mean, if you have any question related to the elements, you can write it and you can ask that question. Then we can discuss that during this discussion forum. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 8. General question. Devante, what does sampajano mean? Like sampajano satima. Does this mean not to break mindfulness when changing one activity to another? Much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually this is the same question which someone else actually asked. What is sampajanya or clear comprehension? So it's the same answer that I have to give. So maintaining unbroken mindfulness even during the what we call the posture junctions is one aspect of sampajanya. So say for example you are walking and you have to now turn, so that is a what we call a posture junction. So at that time also we have to maintain unbroken mindfulness. That is one aspect of clear comprehension. So now it's a breaking point or a kind of a change of posture junction, and we are able to carefully maintain mindfulness. So that is one aspect. And on the other hand, when we are going through any kind of a posture, what are the details available? So what are the subtle aspects available? So that is another point of sampajanya. And actually the commentary explains some other four types of sampajanya also. That is called Sattaka Sampajanya, Gochara Sampajanya, Asammoha Sampajanya. So likewise, four kinds of Sampajanya is also mentioned in the commentary. So the idea is, say when you are maintaining or continuing your practice, Gochara Sampajanya means that you are somehow maintaining mindfulness in any of the four establishments of the mindfulness. That is for Satipatthana. Either you are in the Kayanupassana, either you are in the Vedananupassana, either you are in the Chittanupassana, either you are in the Dhammanupassana. So you are not breaking mindfulness in that sense. So that is one aspect. The other one is Sattaka Sampajanya. So whatever the activity you are doing, so you are doing it for purpose. And before you are conducting it, you do some sort of a preliminary assessment. Is it proper to do it? Is it worthy to do it? Is it correct to do it? So likewise, before conducting whatever the activity, you do such kind of an assessment. And only the necessary activities, therefore, you are doing. So that is another aspect of sampajanya, sattaka sampajanya. And the asammoha sampajanya is where, without making a self, you are applying the wisdom, you are clearly knowing, and therefore you are not misguided, or you are not deluded, you are able to maintain proper mindfulness. And you are able to look at phenomena more objectively, without personifying with them or without getting deluded by them. So this is the asammoha sampajanya. There's another aspect I can't remember. So likewise, there are four types of or four categories of sampajanya mentioned in the commentary. So therefore, sampajanya is in a way a little broader aspect, broader teaching. And that is something that we have to develop. And in other terms, we can say, so this is the seed of panya or the wisdom. So we start it as sampajanya, seeing more details, but it leads to the development of the wisdom. Yeah.
Question number, I think it's 6 of 8. A general question. Bandami Bande, I would like to share an experience that I had recently. I was upset about something and was feeling sad and annoyed. For a split second there, I noticed two people enduring this emotion. One person who was upset about the situation, and a second person who was observing the upset person. I was trying to connect this to the Dhamma I have heard and the practice. Is it something that one would come across in this part, or is it something made up in my mind? Much merit for your guidance with metta. That's the end of the question.
No, actually this is something that we discuss quite often in the practice, that how to have that second person's view or the third person's view. So we may be encountering such situation, such mood, or such, say, mental state. Is it possible for us to look at it objectively? Say, for example, while walking, so we allow the body to walk freely. And we, like an outsider, we are observing that walking body. So this is the mindfulness perspective that we are developing. So we have some sort of a, what you call the vantage point, something, I can't remember. Yeah, some sort of a detached observation that we can do. And even in Vedananupassana, we do the same. Say the body is going through certain kind of pleasurable or painful or equanimous feelings. And we are able to look at it objectively, like a third person, like an outsider. Similarly, when the mind is going through different mental states, so rather than considering them as me or mine, say for example, when the mind is in a bad mood, as you have mentioned, now you are not in a good mood, you are in an upset mood. That is a kind of a mind situation, kind of a state of the mind. Are you able to look at it objectively, like an outsider? You can step back and watch it. So that is the aspect that we are trying to develop and we are trying to emphasize in throughout the mindfulness practice. So what you are experiencing is therefore something good, and you can actually add another perspective to it. So that is what you have seen. There is some sort of experience going on. So that is the unsatisfied mind or the agitated mind. And there is another outsider watching it, so that is the observing mind. And there's another level which you are observing that both phenomena, both situations. So likewise, you can step back, step back, step back and get into several states. So this is actually explained in Vipassana like Jñātañca Jñānañca Ubhopi Vipassati. Jñāta means that the phenomena, that is the agitated mind, upset mind, that is the jnata. Jnana means that the observing mind. So you have a kind of a observing mind which actually observe that situation like an outsider. Ubhava vipassati. Now this vipassati, vipassaka is another aspect. You can see both situations. So likewise, you can have different, say, levels of observation, and it is correct, no problem.
Yeah. Number 7 of 9, mindful sitting. Respected Bhante, today during the sitting session, I realized that as the mind was getting focused on the present moment in body posture and breathing, I was coming out of a very heavy burden that was on my head, as if I was moving away from a heavy load on my shoulders and moving towards a calm and peace. Is this something we should be observing? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Can you repeat the last statement, Chatu?
Yeah. So, as if I was moving away from a heavy load on my shoulders and moving towards calm and peace, is this something we should be observing?
Yeah, if you can observe, no harm. I mean, if you can observe that mind sometimes feel little burdened or feeling heavy, so that also you can observe. And on the other hand, you can observe how mind becomes sometimes lighter, calm, like floating. That also you can observe. So no problem. Actually, these are different states of mind. Sometimes we feel happy, sometimes we feel burdened, sometimes we feel unhappy, sometimes we feel floating, heavy, lighter. Different states are there. So if you can look at them objectively, all these are impermanent situations. None of them are permanent. So you are looking at them more objectively, recognizing that this state also come and go. No harm. Yeah.
Question number 8 of 9. This is a general question, but related to today's Dhamma sermon. Can you briefly explain the Loka Dhamma in the last verse of I think it's Mangala Sutta.
Yes, yes,
Mangala. Which might be a very helpful reminder for all of us. With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, that is available in the Mangala Sutta. Puttasya loka dhammehi chittang yassana kampati. Let me find the verse. Puttasya loka dhammehi chittang yassana kampati. Asokang virajang khemang etam mangala muttamam. So it's not, I mean, if you refer Mangala Sutta, you can easily find it out. Because it is the last verse in the Mangala Sutta. Puttasya loka dhammehi chittang yassa na kampati asokang virajang khemang etam mangala muttamam. Yeah.
Question number 9, I think the last one. General question. Dear Mante, could you please explain how to practice mindfulness without making yourself? That's the end of the question.
Without making a self?
Yeah.
So when you are mindful, you are not making a self, and on the other hand, you can be mindful when the mind is making a self. Say, when you are properly mindful, so there are various phenomena going on and you can look at them objectively, and you are not making a self out of them. Say the walking happens, so you are looking at it objectively, like an outsider. So you are not making a self in the walking body, or you are not making a self in that observing mind. So all are phenomena. On the other hand, when you are developing mindfulness further, so you come across that unattached state of mind, anisthita state of mind, or detached state of mind, unassociated state of mind, and while you are dwelling there, when the mind is dwelling there is no self. But on the other hand, when you are dwelling there, sometimes due to our wrong habits, old habits, there may be a possibility of making a self. So that making part, that constructive part, that construction, that preparation happens inside the mind has to be recognized. Say for example, say you are able to maintain kind of an unassociated, calm, quiet, release and free mind. So at that time, suppose there's a kind of a memory coming to the mind thinking that how you have helped another person. So assume that you have given some money for someone to come out of his bad situation. Now he is able to overcome that bad situation and you are the one really has helped him. Now there may be thoughts arising in your mind making a self. Now this is a good function, good activity that you did, but now there are many thoughts arising praising yourself, making a self, constructing a self. Now this is where we need to apply mindfulness. So the mindfulness has to show us, now there are thoughts arising in the mind, so these thoughts are encouraging a self, these thoughts are encouraging a good person, good personality, good I in the process. So this is what Buddha mentioned as I making or mind making, ahankara mamankara. So that is where we have to carefully apply mindfulness and to disclaim that thought. Rather than encouraging that thoughts, we got to recognize that thoughts and to discourage, or rather drop those thoughts. None of these thoughts belongs to me. They are not me, not necessary to make a self out of that good deed. So similarly, you can apply that to a wrong deed as well. Assume that you did something wrong due to some mistake, and you again and again regret about it. So due to this regretting process, you are making a self. So that also has to be recognized. The mindfulness has to show it. And then you have to properly discard it, disclaim it. So this is where Buddha mentioned how one has to notice this eye making and mind making time to time happen in our mind. Yeah.
But there, I think that's the end of the questions. There was one person who might want to put something to you directly, and I know we're out of time anyway.
Yeah.
I'll just give a few moments in case they still want to. Next time they haven't said anything. So we'd like to be in the session for today. And first of all, we'd like to thank Bhante and pass on our merits for giving up valuable time for this program. Also to the people seen and unseen, helping and participating with the program. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there will be no program happening. Thank you. Teruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai. I just copied the Sinhala verse that Mangala Sutta explaining, and if you can, you can look at the screen and you can get it, the last verse available in the Mangala Sutta. Okay, Teruvan Saranai.